Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for our shape up this week are writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel with us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Also here in Washington, civil rights attorney and author Arsalan Iftikhar. From our bureau in New York City, columnist and blogger Jeff Yang. And Mario Loyola joins us from Austin, Texas. He writes for National Review Magazine and is with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank. Take it away, Jimmy.
La di da. Thanks for that, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
All right. Well, let's get things started with what else? The NBA.
Oh my God, you're so fat.
Karen, you're fat.
You're so fat. You take up like the whole entire seat.
Oh no!
Oh my God! Your glasses are foggy.
That is totally the wrong clip.
Yeah, that sounds like LeBron, maybe Dwayne Wade, kind of maybe he's changing notes there.
No,
trash talking.
Right, exactly. Well, for those of us in the know, we know that the Miami Heat defeated the Oklahoma City Thunder last night, 122-106. Michelle, you picked it all along. You had it right. I know you're rooting for the Heat.
You know, see,
right?
I understand why all of you are trying to find a way not to give me my propers. I understand
not,
that.
Not me.
Cue Aretha. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
NPR idol over here.
Yes, I knew. I just felt that after they lost the championship to the Mavericks last year, that they'd come back stronger. They had the chemistry. They had the desire. And your humble pie for dessert last night, Jimmy, how did it taste? How did it taste? Did you not say 2 weeks ago that LeBron was not, quote, a finisher?
I did, but he's obviously grown up a little bit, and he's learned what it is. Oh, look, here's the difference. The difference is that in Cleveland, he was the team. In Miami, he's clearly playing on a team, and he's learned how to do that. You know, and I think it's you learn how to do that when you don't have that kind of pressure. You know, when you're not carrying the team, the city, your baby mom, your baby mama's mama on your back, you know, you're able to kind of do your thing and operate and play well with others and learn what that means. And I think he earned it. You know, this wasn't a blowout. Let's not pretend that it was 105-20. You know,
this, the last game, yo.
Yeah.
This was all that matters.
Very serious. Anyway,
game four.
Arsalan, A-Train.
Yes, sir.
After your beloved Celtics fell out of the series, you turned your support to the Thunder. You just can't catch a break, man.
You know, as a grown man, I promised myself there are three things that I would never do. Number one, call another dude delicious. Number two, vote for a Republican named Cheney. And number three is root for the Miami Heat. And I knew I was in trouble today when I got an email from an NPR host who shall remain nameless at 12:15 in the morning last night, basically talking smack. But, you know, LeBron got his. I will give him that. But, you know, it was really, really interesting because a lot of people thought that Oklahoma City Thunder would take it this year, but they clearly showed that they're just not ready yet. I mean, their median age for the starting five is about 24.2 years old.
That's not
they're
fair.
Young. They're going to be around. But, you know, LeBron and the Miami Cavaliers, I mean, the Miami Heat, finally got there.
Does he have his green envy pants on today? Let me check.
I mean, Oklahoma, I mean, could it just be that they were ready, but LeBron was also ready. He'd also reached some maturity.
No, because OKC, this was the first time ever for the OKC Thunder to get to the NBA Finals.
Okay.
LeBron was there last year. So, you know,
they earned it.
Well, I'm saying they earned the berth there, but I'm saying that they didn't have it to take it to the next level.
Okay.
What did the other guy say?
Jeff Yang, how are you feeling today, man? Who are you rooting for? That's what I want to know.
That's a funny thing, because I was actually just talking to somebody saying, I don't have a dog in this hunt, you know, after Lynn's sanity died. I was like, all right, you know, I can move on to other sports. But the funny thing is I actually found myself rooting for the Thunder more because of that whole sort of underdog thing and feeling really hypocritical because I'm you know, a Yankees fan up and down the street all the way to Bronx, you know, the Bronx. And the reason why they get slammed all the time is because, you know, obviously they got the big budget, big market. They buy their stars. And that's exactly what the Heat did. And that's kind of why I think a lot of people, you know, beefed about the Heat kind of just rolling in dropping this on the rest of the league, you know. So, I mean, I was rooting for the Thunder. At the same time, I've got to sort of, you know, give props to LeBron. He did prove something. And, you know, it's good that he's not going out like Ewing did without, you know, a superstar without a title. This is probably the First Amendment.
Just one thing I got to clarify, though. There is a salary cap in the NBA,
right,
unlike in baseball.
That's a big difference.
It is not the same. The payrolls are pretty much the same. So
Mario Loyola, Super Mario. I know you want to. You like to get over to Miami from time to time. So I'm guessing that you're on your way to the airport right now to pop bottles with LeBron at this very moment this weekend.
Well, yeah, I've got, you know, I grew up in Miami. Half my family's there. I've got a lot of Cubanito cousins that are very happy today. You know, and I think it was a team thing more than a LeBron thing. Miami scored, you know, 20-something three-pointers. I think what happened here is that the Heat's a more experienced team and a stronger team, and once they figured out how to handle the Thunder got handled.
That's it. That's what's up.
Yeah.
No
so,
more need be said.
So it wasn't a country mouse versus city mouse thing. So, I mean, a lot of people were playing up that narrative.
I mean, I was sympathetic. Yeah, I'm here in Austin, Texas, and we're sympathetic to, you know, to the region was representing, and I was sympathetic to that. I was sympathetic to underdog country mouse. That's a very compelling narrative, but when you get handled, you get handled. And
Mario's about the bottom line. He's like, look, don't even try it.
All right, guys. Well, you know what? Let's keep it moving because we all know that people are cheering for the bus monitor who got bullied on the bus, on the school bus. You know, this week, Michelle.
You know, I don't know that we need to hear that again. That
right.
is kind of what we were hearing by mistake earlier in the program. And I have to tell you that it is so disturbing. It is so disturbing that I don't really feel like I need to hear it again, if that's okay
sure.
with you.
Yeah.
But it's about as though yeah. as you these were middle school kids. It was posted on YouTube under a video under the title Making the Bus Monitor Cry. Which they did, and people were so outraged. That clip was actually an edited version. The entire video is about 10 minutes long, and I personally cannot subject myself or you to this. And can I just tell you this? And I have personal experience with this, so it's a little hard. But that the kids at one point say her whole family must have committed suicide because they can't stand her. And the truth is, one of her own sons did.
Yeah,
that's awful.
They did, and it is awful. Terrible. The question, though, I think, is what should happen. Now, what should happen now?
I think it's tough, but A-Train, let's get you first in here. Arsalan.
Well, not only do I think the kids should be suspended, I think that they should volunteer in a nursing home for a year and have to scrub every bus in the school district with a toothbrush. I mean, I think that this was, obviously unconscionable. It shows that bullying is truly an epidemic. It always has been, and now is sort of coming into the forefront of our zeitgeist. We obviously saw that It Gets Better campaign, targeting young gay and lesbian youth, who are the victims of bullying many times. And now with this latest incident, we see that bullying really knows no age or racial demographics, that older people can be bullied, younger people can be bullied, black people can be bullied, white people can be bullied, and it's just something that has to have a zero tolerance policy everywhere.
I have to tell you that those kids seem like a Benetton ad. I mean, the fact is the kids, yeah. I mean, from what I could see, there was no particular group involved. The kids seem to be right. of every demographic, if you get my meaning. They were all...
This, Jimmy. To me, was kind of like gonzo bullying. I mean, this is like, you're pushing the envelope here. Because kids bully kids. And I wrote a piece for the Lexington Herald Leader, which I kind of, I didn't affirm bullying, but I just said, bullying is a part of of life, and you have to know how to handle bullies in this life. And I don't think people should bully, but I think we should teach our children how to handle bullying. That said, I also, more so in the video than anything, I saw like a failure of parenting. Because obviously these kids didn't wake up today and say, hey, I'm going to go out and do something bugged out. These kids had what my grandmother might call bad parenting. You didn't have no home training.
Well, I don't know.
They didn't have no home training.
Mary, I don't know about
okay,
that
go
either.
Ahead.
We don't know
Mario,
anything about
ahead.
Their parents. I mean, the parents who we've seen interviewed have been completely horrified by this.
Well, where did they get this from? Where did they get it from? They got it from Snoop Dogg's fault, right?
It's ludicrous. Mario, jump in.
I was going to say, kids that age are sadistic. They've always been sadistic. Kids that age like setting insects on fire. And and kicking people when they're down and making fun of everybody that they think that's downtrodden, and I think what's missing here, I mean, that's why we've always had corporal punishment up until the last several decades. I mean, this case for me screams out for corporal punishment. I don't know, kids are always going to be this way, and I don't think it's a failure of parenting. I think the parents are probably horrified. And you have to have discipline in school, otherwise kids run rampant. That's what happens.
So the real solution is to grab a piece of wood and whack these kids on
well,
the
what
behind.
What do you think should
right?
happen? You never answered that question, Jimmy. What do you think should happen?
What I did say is that it's tough, and I'm sure that the school has some kind of policy in place where no bullying, no harsh language, and obviously they should be suspended. But there's not a lot else that can happen. They didn't break any laws. They certainly. broke some moral laws. But at the end of the day, like I said, I don't care. As a parent, I'm looking at this situation and I'm seeing a problem with the parenting, because my son, my daughters would never behave like that. Well, maybe. I don't know,
Jimmy. Kids do a lot of stuff when parents aren't around. I mean, that's tell one me of the enduring lessons of being a parent, is you don't know everything. I mean, I'm not justifying any of this. I don't know. Jeff Yang, you want a piece of this? You're a dad also, right?
I am a dad, and I have two kids, two boys. I mean, that's probably an important dimension there, right? You know, one 8-year-old, one 4-year-old, and both of them have both kind of been bullied and been bullies to a certain extent. And one of the things which strikes me here is that there's a dimension which hasn't been talked about as much. The reason why these kids did this, clearly, it seems to me, was to record it and put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
That this was like a stunt on their part. I think that it's not just about the bullying factor. It's about this sort of social media status attempt at jockeying in order to, you know, be more extreme, to be more cool, to have done something really kind of, you know, off the wall and extreme. And I think that's actually something that's got to be talked about within the context of this discussion, that there's this desire to not just do the typical, if you want to even call it that, things that boys do, but now that there's an audience that could be national, international, these kids are doing it because they want to get hits, because they want to get known, you know?
Interesting. But I'll just close this by quoting that well-known philosopher, Lady Gaga, who said that the bully and the bullied are often the same. So one and the same. And so I think that there's a lot more to learn here. But on a positive note, you know that somebody set up a website to send the lady on vacation saying she needed a break. It's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars so far, which, you know, small donations anyway. So there is something in the universe that's positive about this. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, columnist Mario Loyola, and blogger Jeff Yang. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, maybe she'll make it to Vegas in her new Lamborghini and bully the blackjack player, like she literally, because she deserves a vacation. But anyway, there's been a lot happening lately when it comes to so-called minorities in the U.S. We have what I call Dream Act Light, and a new study that shows that it's not Latinos that are coming to the U.S. in droves, it's Asians.
You know, there's been such an interesting week in the whole question of who is in the United States, who we are as Americans, and pointing out that this Pew Research study, which we talked about earlier in the week on the program, pointed out that Asian Americans have surpassed Hispanics as the nation's fastest growing racial group. They're the highest earning and best educated racial group in the country. Also this week, you see both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama making major outreach to the Latino voters through their national elected officials who are having a conference here. So I just wanted to ask, you know, which of these events do you think is most important and meaningful this week? And Arsalan, you can start.
I think both of them. You know, obviously with President Obama's announcement last Friday on deferred action, which essentially would, you know, grant a temporary reprieve from deportation for people who were brought to the country, you know, between the ages of 16 and 30, have been here for 5 years, no criminal record, a high school GED or military service. You know, it's a big step, you know, and I think that you know, what's interesting is how it's being, you know, cynically cast as a political ploy on. But what most people don't know is that deferred action doesn't grant permanent immigration status in the U.S. And essentially, you know, it doesn't turn. It's not a pathway to citizenship. On the flip side, really quickly, you know, on the Asian American study by Pew, what's really interesting is, you know, for so long the racial minority demographics in America have always talked about white, black, and Latino, and now we're seeing, you know, Asian Americans, and I'm an Asian American. You know, people have this monolithic view of us, but, you know, we have people from Jeremy Lin in the NBA to Aziz Ansari, the comedian. You know, it shows that we should be talked about with the same political clout as other minority groups in America.
Mario, what do you think? What jumps out for you this week?
Well, and I think that there would be a great thing if the views of Asian Americans are talked about a lot more, for among other things, because they believe 69% of Asian Americans in the Pew study believe that hard work equals success, which is a much higher number than, you know, 58% for the general population, and even lower numbers for other minority groups. And that's a great thing, because that means it's not a natural constituency for the dependency state that Obama and others are trying to create in the United States, which is a great thing. It gets us back to you know, limited government and self-reliance as models for a good society.
Yeah, even though there's still majority Democrats.
Two-thirds of Asian Americans voted for Obama.
Yeah, right. Two-thirds of Asian Americans did vote for Obama. Thank you, Jeff. But I don't know, Mario, you know that Mitt Romney's making a big bid for Latinos, and he gave a major speech to this National Association of Latino Elected Officials. Did he make any headway there?
Well, I think that the Republican Party has to lose its image as being a culturally anti-immigrant and xenophobic party. I think that that's a big barrier to appealing to Hispanics. But if candidates like Romney, people like Jeb Bush in the party, leaders like that, that do make that appeal and that do come across well for Latinos, if they can get over that cultural barrier, then the message is, which is one of opportunity and family tradition and stuff like that, is one that's actually very naturally appealing to Latinos. So I think that headway can be made. I think that the immigration debates of 2006 and since then have been very unfortunate. The Republican Party has lost all of the headway that it had made by the 2004 election under Bush's very pro-immigrant stance.
Can Jeff get the last word in?
Sure. Thank you. I think what's really interesting is that both these things really, to some degree, are about erasing this line between, America and other, to a certain extent, Americans and others. And if you look at the DREAM Act, I mean, people who have served in the military especially, like fought for this country, represented, there's nothing conscionable about the idea that these people cannot stay here, cannot be a part of this country. And this is a small but important step in that direction. As far as the Pew study, I mean, this is the first major study to even focus on the Asian American community in this kind of depth and rigor. And, while there are problems with the study, I think there's some controversy right now. There are a lot of people in the community who said, this thing kind of doesn't go deep enough, doesn't sort of present the issues that many Asian Americans on the lower end of the economic spectrum are still dealing with. I think this is an important step in the right direction as far as just erasing some of the veil of ignorance. And, I think what Arsalan said is totally right. I mean, we're both Asian American. We come from very different places, and we're both here and belong here.
Okay, you sure do. Jeff Yang is a columnist with The Wall Street Journal Online and a pop and politics correspondent for NPR member station WNYC with us from New York. Mario Loyola is director of the Center for 10th Amendment Studies at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a think tank focused on the impact of federal policy on states. Also a columnist for the conservative outlet, The National Review, with us from member station KUT in Austin. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, author, and founder of TheMuslimGuy.com here in Washington, D.C., along with who else? Jimmy Israel, writer and culture critic, also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.
Yep, yep.
Stay cool.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.